You're listening to CJSR 88.5. I'm Lucas Anders, your moving radio correspondent. Lindsay McIntyre is the director, writer, producer, and editor, alongside Katrina Beattie, is a co-producer on the short film Nugukta, The South Wind, will be featured as part of the Film and Arts Society, or FAVA's 40th anniversary screening, which features talented local artists, including Lifetime member Lindsay. Her film will screen out at the Capitol Theater in Fort Edmonton Park on Friday, March 15th at 7 p.m. Welcome to Moving Radio, Lindsay.
Thanks so much for having me, Lucas. I'm really excited to be back on radio in my hometown, Edmonton.
That's absolutely exciting to have you. We're incredibly lucky to have you a part of the show. So we'll get started just talking about your understanding of the film. I always appreciate getting a perspective from the director, just telling us about what you believe the film truly is at its core.
So Nugukta is a short film. It's about 17 minutes long, and it is a dramatization of a true story that my grandmother told me about life for her when she first came down from the Arctic. This story, it happens in the mid-1930s, and it's an Inuk woman and her young daughter who've come to live in the South with a white man who's sort of in the film represented by a policeman. And it's them sort of adapting to life in the South and figuring out kind of what's required of them in this very new and different location.
I noticed you used a very interesting color palette based on maybe the child's experiences with her grandmother and it being very bright with yellow hues. And then when we're introduced to the policeman, Ray, there's some darkness. Can you talk a little bit about that contrast and if you maybe felt if that was intentional?
Sure. I think there's a couple of different themes that happen in the film with color, as well as maybe the way that we treated things in terms of light and dark, in terms of freedom and constraint. So these are maybe some motifs that are happening often when the mom and the little girl are outside. There's a sense of freedom. There's a lighter sense of the music and of even the sounds are more alive. There's a much brighter, warmer color palette that's evident on screen. And notably also, mom and daughter are able to speak freely. So not only just speak freely, but to speak Inuktitut freely. And whenever they're in the house, which is kind of this more oppressive colonial space, they are certainly more restrained and sometimes just not speaking at all. In fact, there's kind of an underpinning of not speaking that happens within the film. And sometimes that's in the presence of the man in the film, but sometimes that's just inside in general, where there's a little bit of a deader feeling inside and a little bit of a darker or more oppressive feeling inside.
It's super interesting because you sort of notice that moment where they're in the house and the postman comes and there's a letter and there's this sense of excitement. And even then, you know, there's that barrier and the outside world coming in, but it's her culture that's coming to her through her parents. So I found that quite interesting, that even that kind of dynamic and contrast.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of thinking about it when the door opens and that like the door is standing open when this conversation happens with the policeman. And yeah, there's some kind of like the freeing open sounds of outside break the space inside. And yeah, the life in the girl who's portraying Marguerite in the film. So her name is Naomi Natsek and she was really fantastic. It's her first time acting actually. And she was really fantastic, but that energy that she brought to that scene with the postman and the excitement that she had for what was to arrive with the letter, which in the story, the postman explains, has taken quite a long time to get there, in part because it's written in syllabics and nobody at the post office could understand where it belonged. And so there was quite a delay in it getting there, not to mention the transit time that it would have just taken at that time for a letter to come from the north. And so it's a pretty special thing. It's a pretty big deal that a letter has come from home. And it's a letter from her big sister, Daisy. And so it's this thing that she's been anticipating or hoping would come at any moment. And so it's a real moment of light and hope in the film for her.
Yeah, you really take us on a journey with how much strength it took for the grandmother to strike that balance with those outside forces really trying to erase their culture, trying to pass along those traditions that really mattered, but also sort of hiding it when it was required back in this time. It wasn't as easy to be yourself. There's this push and pull and resistance to assimilation that certainly is a theme that pervades this film. A little bit of resistance, but also having to play that game, showing that we're following the rules. I thought that was really interesting and really well done by the actress who played the grandmother, Brenda.
So just to clarify, the story portrays my grandmother's story, but the woman in the film is the mother of the little girl. And so she's playing the mother, and Brenda Putelik is her name. And she's a fantastic human being and a fantastic performer, although for her as well, this was her first time performing for the screen or really at all. And so that was a really incredible process getting Brenda and Naomi on board, because I didn't do it in a traditional casting way. I didn't go out and ask people to read sides. I went to Inuit community and I asked people if they were interested in helping to tell my grandmother's story. And so these were people who were connected to the story in some way, who were interested and passionate about the story and wanting to tell it in a good way, in an honorable way for my grandmother, who has since passed. So that doesn't answer your question. Your question was about the strength that she had. Yeah, the film really, I wanted to explore that sense of benevolent racism in a way, like that sense that this was actually the right thing to do. I didn't want to portray the policeman as all bad, because I don't think it's true that anybody is ever all bad or all good. And so I'm really reluctant to do that. I was interested in creating a dynamic or a conflict within him, or at least within the viewer, who might even identify with some of the things that he's saying or understand at least where he's coming from by saying those things. I think it was really important that he needed to not believe that he was a bad guy in the things that he was saying, but that sort of sense of propriety that perhaps made it so that my grandmother wasn't allowed to speak Inuktitut when she, you know, came down from the north. That's part of the dynamic that I was exploring with the mother and the daughter, that conflict of language of, is it appropriate for you to speak in this language, or is it dangerous for you to speak in this language? And how can she structure things to make it safe for her daughter, to make it okay for them to survive? Right? She's still struggling and surviving within this space. So that was some of the things that I was playing with in the film.
I think you play a pretty good balance of that. I did find just this loving, beautiful spirit coming from the mother when she feels the wind while she's doing the laundry, and then just showing the daughter that she can have strength. She can do these things that she's doing and make the jam. Like you said, the policeman, although there's racism that's benevolent or ingrained in him, he's essentially trying to protect as well, even though it just doesn't feel comfortable. But I think that's what you wanted to portray, I assume, with that.
Yeah, and then the scene in the film that is only a minute long, it feels a lot longer than that, where they're all sitting at the dinner table, essentially in this one room kitchen dining room space. It's a beautiful, basically we're shooting into, it was the Cunningham House at the St. Albert Museum, this beautiful space. So they're sitting at the table and nobody speaks, nobody says a word for, it's only 1 minute, but it feels excruciatingly long. And so we worked, I was working with re-recording mixer Johnny Blurow, who did the sound design for it. And so we worked on that scene to heighten the sound and to emphasize the absolute awkwardness of that tension that all of the characters were feeling, because the little girl did not want to be at that table. And you could feel the conflicting position that the mom is in needing to uphold these things and these structures, these ways of speaking and ways of being inside of this home that essentially isn't hers. And I think it's one of my favorite scenes because of all of those things, but it's literally a scene where nobody says a word.
Yeah, it's amazing how powerful a scene can be without speaking. I find it really interesting that you explore some of that silence, because it can be really powerful. Sometimes we feel like we need to fill the air with dialogue, but this scene at the table, it really speaks without having words. So I really appreciated that moment.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really important to me. I mean, I come from experimental filmmaking and a lot of my films are very, very visual. For me, not about writing dialogue and making the words convey things. It's, you know, what can you communicate with light and picture and framing and mood and tension and positioning? What can you do without doing all of those things? How much can you say without saying anything? And so there's a few scenes in the film that are designed in a way that are meant to be more like moments, and they're not meant to be a scene with a strict structure of a scene. There's this turn or this purpose to every word and every utterance. And I especially wanted the spaces around Margarita and Kumutna, the mom and the daughter, to have that more open of ceiling or that open structure to them.
There's sort of a curiosity in me in terms of the letter. There's some distressing news that comes to the mother. The connection was in terms of the family that was writing about losing a child.
Yeah, so for Kumutna, who is the mother, she's at first interpreting this letter to her daughter, translating it into English, is learning for the very first time that her daughter, that one of the children that she would have left behind in the Arctic, had had a baby and had lost the child. And so it's just hitting her, you know, in that moment as she reads the letter and she's experiencing the devastation of that right there in front of us. And that was especially true in production. We didn't shoot that scene 7 times. We shot that scene once. Because that raw emotion that Brenda brought to that scene was a very real and visceral thing. The story is something that is very relatable to a lot of Inuit women, a lot of Indigenous women, and women being taken from their families or being taken from their homes, which is something that happened to my grandmother many, many years ago. It's not an uncommon story. So I think it was this thing that she brought to that scene and weighed on how we put that together.
I really felt it in that moment. It's incredible. You said you went out to these communities and found people that wanted to engage in this story, but her performance was just so raw and beautiful in so many moments, as well as the daughter, Marguerite. When I saw that moment of her picking up the letter, there's just some resistance to those outside forces that keep pushing. And like you said, it's a very common story for Indigenous folks, like for their story to be erased. And there's just this beautiful, like, pushing back in a way, even though, like I said, those forces are still acting on them in all these moments throughout your story.
That's a great kind of summary, almost, of the heart of it that I really wanted to get at, is that despite all of this, and despite all the hardships, and despite the displacement, and despite the fact that Marguerite, the little girl, can't even read the syllabics because she hasn't been taught and may not be taught, she grabs hold of that, of her culture, and she will bring it forward into the world. So that's that moment of hope that we're left with at the end, that the resilience of Indigenous people and how we're not gone, we're not going anywhere.
You're listening to Movie Room Radio on CGSR 88.5. I'm speaking with Lindsay McIntyre, the director, writer, editor, and producer of Nagooktook, The South Wind. You can see it out at the Fort Edmonton Park Capitol Theater on March 15th at 7 p.m. That's a Friday, as part of the FAVA's 40th anniversary. We're going to jump into a little bit of conversation about your history with FAVA. You're a lifetime member, Lindsay, and being a part of this anniversary sort of celebration must be special. Could you explain your connection to the Film and Arts Society and how you felt it helped you?
Sure. I love talking about FAVA. I wouldn't be a filmmaker if it wasn't for FAVA. FAVA was a really important part of my development as a filmmaker, and I've been making films now for 25 years. It's what I do now entirely. It's a pretty important place that FAVA holds in my life. I first joined FAVA in 1999. Kind of funny. I was phoning them because I had just come back from New York. I'd been living in New York for a little while and I'd just come back and I needed a bulb for my projector. That's why I called FAVA. And it was strange because FAVA didn't have bulbs for projectors. I think I needed to go to McBain Camera for that. But it was the first place that I called and it's like, oh, these people seem like they might know what's going on with this 16 millimeter projector I had. They totally didn't. But I did go down to FAVA and I met some of the most wonderful people who continued to mean the world to me. One of those people was Helen Folkman, who is then the executive director of FAVA and was the executive director for a long time. And she was this incredibly welcoming, spirit. I mean, like I walked in the door and I instantly felt like I belonged there, like I was wanted there, like I had something to offer. And she really opened the door and made space for people. And as a young person with a lot of barriers in front of me that would occasionally pop up, especially when you're trying to learn about film and video or trying to learn some, even some technical things, sometimes, you know, there were doors that would get shut in your face. And Helen was a person who opened the door wide and made sure that you felt welcome. And so I basically walked in the door there and never left. I became a staff member at one point. I did work in membership communications and programming, which is what the job was called at the time. I think now that job is like 3 or 4 different jobs, but at the time it was just one job. I took courses, but I also, in with the privilege of that position, got to program courses. And so often I would just program the things that I wanted to see or the things that I thought would help members of the community. And so I got to take a lot of workshops and meet a lot of filmmakers. And I also worked in the production department with another really wonderful mainstay of the Edmonton film community, Dave Morgan. But I can't speak highly enough for all of the wonderful people that have come in and out through those doors over the many, many years that I was a part of the FABA film community. I joined the board eventually. I was film chair. I've been the vice president, been the film chair a few times, I think. And they worked on some of the community programming, outreach committee, those kinds of things. And I taught lots of workshops there as well. It was a space for creation, and it made making films something that was possible and accessible to many people, if not all people, very, very many people that came through the door.
Why do you think the Film and Video Arts Society is vital to the Edmonton arts community?
I think that FABA is a community connector. I think it's a hub for where things happen and how things happen, and a point of access for sure for equipment and things that we would not normally be able to access, things that at one time used to be behind closed doors. I think it's a space where you can feel free to fail, to explore and experiment, play and figure things out, because it doesn't operate within the hierarchies of I film or what makes film good or is should you be shooting on film or video, that kind of thing. We didn't really have those fights at FABA. And it's interesting because a lot of the other film co-ops in the country, and they're all really important institutions where they sit, right? They often did film or video. And FABA was one of the first and one of the only that was, it was always from the beginning, the Film and Video Arts Society. And so it sort of encompassed everything, and it became this place where any art form or any ideas could thrive. And you could always find people to collaborate with and ideas or things that you could learn or ways to think about things differently. In terms of access and community, there was no better place than FABA.
What was it for you that really lit you up, the moment for you that made you decide that you wanted to be a storyteller, a filmmaker?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if I have a good answer, though. I did not come to film as a storyteller, and I do tell stories in film, but I didn't start that way. I started when I was living in New York just prior to joining FABA in 1998 or 99, and I found a piece of film on the street. I was playing a game with a friend of mine called the Up and Down game, where one of us got like belly button level and up, and the other one got belly button level and down. We go around and we collect up garbage on the street and we'd bring it home. We'd make things. And so one of those days I was lucky enough to get belly button level and down, and I found a piece of film, and it was just like a jumbled piece of film, 16 millimeter film, black and white film. Didn't know what it was, didn't know what it did, didn't know what was on it. And I brought it back and I started playing with it and doing things with it just as a material. And one of the things that I did, I stuck a piece of tape on the film, and when I peeled it up, the image came with it. And it was still a little bit sticky, the tape, so I was able to stick it down again in another orientation onto another part of the film. And so in my mind, the world had just broken open and I had double exposed the film. Of course, that isn't at all what had happened. What I did was something that's more akin to something called bipacking. But in my mind, it was double exposing, and it was the most exciting thing that had ever happened. And so I really wanted to do a lot of this. I wanted to do more of it. And so I decided I would go get myself a projector, the one that I needed a bulb for, when I contacted FABA. And I met this guy at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, and he gave me a pile of old movies. And I brought them all home to do more of this. And it turns out that regular film, that doesn't happen. You can't stick a piece of tape on it and make the image peel up. So it must have been the conditions that the film had been sitting in, like had been in the wind and the sun and the rain, and maybe had been peed on for God knows how long. I think it was in Brooklyn that I found this piece of film. And the conditions, the properties of the film had changed. And so I set about figuring out how to reproduce this. And it ended up being quite a journey and quite a process of learning, wherein I learned all kinds of things about experimental film, all kinds of techniques, all kinds of, spoke to all kinds of artists, and really kind of got addicted to research, but I also got addicted to working with film as a material. So I really came to film as an artist and always am thinking about the boundaries of the film. And when I say film, I mean actual celluloid, like 16 millimeter film. So it's 16 millimeters wide and it's got sprockets and it's got a certain width and a certain thickness. And there's things about it that can prevent it from running through a projector, for example. So how far can I push that before that will happen? What can I do with this? How can I explore the boundaries that this physical medium has and make things that are exciting to me? So I didn't come at it as a storyteller. I really did come at it as a material, as an artist working with a material, but very quickly got deeply addicted to it. And it wasn't long before I was telling stories with film, but I think that's probably also part of why there is so much space within the films of mine that do tell stories for other ways of understanding the world or of thinking about the way we understand media.
And I'm bringing it back full circle, back to your film. When people come out to see your film, the screening of it, but what message or understanding do you hope the audience will take away?
That's a very difficult question. I am really often trying to make sure in the films that I make that there's space for somebody to find their own truth within something. So it's never about making a declaration or wanting to make sure that everyone in the audience leaves with the same understanding of things. But I guess I made the film to honor my grandmother and to honor her journey. And so I think if there was one thing that I wanted people to leave with is to recognize the incredible strength that there is in Indigenous women and the journeys that they've endured, the hardships they've endured and the journey that they've been on to get us where we are today. And at the same time, maybe to recognize within your own history, whether you come from an Indigenous family or not, all of the things that your grandparents dreamed you into this world. And so I think it's important to recognize what they went through to make this life possible.
It's certainly a beautiful message. And I think you did a great job of representing that strength on film. Thank you so much for this great conversation, Lindsay. A lifetime member. You can catch her incredibly moving film, Nugukatuk, The South Wind. Katrina Beatty is a co-producer on the film as well. You can catch it out at the Capitol Theater in Fort Edmonton Park on Friday, March 15th at 7 p.m. Lindsay McIntyre is the filmmaker. You got to come check it out. It's a beautiful film. I'm Lucas Anders, your correspondent on CJSR 88.5 Community Powered Radio.
I know you want the best for her, but it's not helping.